spandex buns and kilts. I am your host, Jenny Coco Cure, and this is episode 26 of Bandex Buns and Kilts, and we are still doing the rewatch recap of the first season of Outlander, and we are now up to episode 11, which is called The Devil's Mark. And I actually just rewatched that episode, and I gotta say, y'all, it's been a minute since I've seen it, and I right now, as I'm sitting here recording this, I have puffy eyes. I have puffy red eyes, and I have kind of a soggy nose at the moment because I actually got emotional and cried a little bit because this is a really touching episode. This is a really, really, really sweet. I mean, yeah, it's got some messed up parts too. Of course, we all know the messed up parts, Claire and Galus being thrown in the thieves' hole, and the witch trial was just jacked up as all get out. Just like, people are real messed up, man, or at least were. They still are, but I mean, back then it was just really, really messed up, you know? But when Jamie came in and rescued Claire, and told those people who were trying to beat her, he kicked that guy out of the way. And then he told them that if they thought that they had more power than God, because God, he made a promise to God to protect this woman, you know, when he made his vows. And if they felt like they had more authority than God, he did not have that opinion. Oh, Lord have mercy. I love that scene. I also love the whole scene in the forest with them, you know, afterward when she's talking to him and telling him stuff, and oh my God, and the scene where anyway, I'm telling y'all everything right now instead of getting into the recap, so let's just get into this recap. Okay. The episode starts. All right, had an interruption. Let's restart this. Okay. All right, the episode starts with Claire and Galus being thrown in the thieves' hole. As you will recall in last week's episode, they were arrested in Galus's house and charged with witchcraft. And in this episode, they show where they are thrown in this hole in the ground, essentially. And I mean, just so harshly just thrown in. I mean, they dumped their bodies in there like bundles of laundry. it was bad, you know, like, wow, they have absolutely no concern or care for these women. But they just dropped them in this hole and then locked the grate above the hole. It's like a sewer, like, you know. Just terrible. I'm sure it smelled like one too. So anyway, when they straightened up and realized that, you know, hey, we're in a thieves' hole, they started to argue immediately. You know, Galus told Claire that this was her own fault. Say, why did they show up at my house just when you arrived? And Claire was like, it was Leary, the girl that you sold the ill wish to, you dumb bitch. You the reason we down here, because you been practicing witchcraft and dancing in the forest naked and shit and letting your maid know. And, you know, that's how these sorts of things usually start. You know, when you're in trouble, the first thing you want to do is blame somebody. So they were blaming each other. After they got that out of the way and settled down a little bit, Claire basically said, you know, well, okay, at the end of the argument, Claire basically shut Galus down by saying, hey, look, you might not have killed Dougal's wife with witchcraft or whatever, but you sure killed your husband. And it wasn't witchcraft that did it. It was poison. And Galus looked at her, didn't have nothing to say. So then she turned away. So then she explained to Claire, might as well, you know, explain So she explained to Kier that she started out with white arsenic, you know, just kind of, you know, putting it in his food little by little, you know. And she thought that eventually he would die from this slow poisoning. And she said that she felt he would be dead before the baby was born. You know, I guess she didn't really think, you know, too far ahead, because without Arthur, she had no protection. The only thing that was protecting her from the crazy villagers, you know, doing what they're getting ready to do now, was Arthur. That's the only thing that was protecting her. He was her husband. He was a man of power, a man of importance, and he protected her from getting into trouble. So that's why she was able to get away with all the crazy shit that she was doing, selling potions and charms and dancing in the forest naked. It was Arthur the whole time. But Galus was sitting down there, you know, talking about how, yeah, I did all that stuff. So I did. But you know what? Don't worry, Claire, because Dougal is going to come and he's going to save us. Claire was like, bitch, no. No, he's not. He was sent away. And by the way, I said this in the last episode. I think I was mistaken. Claire did not tell her this part at that time. She was basically just trying to get Gillis to leave and told Gillis that she was crazy and wasn't, you know, Dougal wasn't going to, you know, be able to protect her. But now she says that the reason that he can't protect her is because Colum sent him away. Colum sent him away and sent him away with my husband, bitch. My husband took him to bury his wife. So neither one of them are here. We are fucked. Basically, it was Claire's trying to get this woman to see. So finally, Galus has this look of, oh shit, on her face. Like, wow, maybe this is a problem. Maybe this is going to be an issue here. So anyway, you know, they have to spend the night in the thieves' hole with the rats. And, you know, the guy, the prisoner guard or whatever, throws some old bread down for them and stuff. And, you know, for their dinner, it's just a horrible, deplorable situation. You know, and, you know, they're kind of upset with each other because they feel like the other is responsible for getting them into this mess. The next morning, they are dragged out of the thieves' hole, marched through the streets to the courtroom, I guess, and put basically on trial to defend themselves against the charges, which basically are that they are witches. The courtroom is filled with villagers, angry, bloodthirsty villagers who basically want to see these bitches burn. And they think they're standing up there, you know, on the stand thinking, yeah, we're screwed. This is not going to go well. And thankfully, though, as they stand there thinking that they have not a chance to defend themselves, Ned Gowan shows up. And, you know, when Ned showed up, I mean, he already had his facts and statistics on lock. He walked into the courtroom and immediately said, your honors, as you well know, the Witchcraft Act of 1563 was repealed in 1735. So I am here to tell you that this trial, this whole thing, is illegal. Of course, the crowd, which wanted to see some witches burn, was like, boo, bitch, get out. We don't want to hear none of that. This ain't about the law. This is about watching some bitches burn, okay? So get out. The judges were like, look, this is not a technical legal proceeding. This is sanctioned by the church. So this does not have anything to do with your goddamn facts and statistics. So you can back the fuck up right now. So then Ned's like, oh, okay, so y'all are just like, fuck British law. That's cool. I'm glad about that because we don't like the Brits anyway, but we are still in Scotland, are we not? We're still under Scottish law? Okay, so since we're doing the Scottish thing, Scotland does say that a witch at least deserves a defense attorney, which, by the way, I am. So we can do that part at least, right? The judges very begrudgingly said,
Fine.
So Ned became the defense attorney for Claire and Galus. I love this. Let me just say, and I am forgetting what the actor's real name is that plays Ned Gowan, but the man is freaking brilliant. He was absolutely awesome in this. This right here, I really believe should have gotten him like a Best Supporting Actor nod. If he did not get a nomination, I don't recall if he did, but the actor that plays Ned Gowan in this courtroom drama scene was just awesome. He was just awesome. Given Tobias, everybody talks about how great Tobias is as Frank and as Blackjack, but you gotta give it to this guy who plays Ned. He's awesome as well. Very, very good. So, okay. The trial begins basically with people providing testimony. The first person to step forward to provide testimony against the accused was Jenny. I think Jenny was her name. She was the maid for Galus. And she went before the judges and basically told them that Galus was someone who would, create love charms and potions and different things and ill wishes and all this stuff to anyone who would come to her and ask for them. And that this was something that she was doing for years. This maid person claimed that she worked for them for 5 years and she just saw all this stuff. And the judges asked whether or not that she saw Claire taking part in any of this. And the woman and the maid was like, yes, many times. So they would gather herbs and create potions and stuff like that. And this is true. Claire was there visiting a few times, I think. And her and Galus did gather herbs together, but they were making medicine. At least Claire was. And the potions or whatever were basically medicines that Claire was making. I don't know what Galus was doing, but the maid servant basically was throwing Claire under the bus along with Galus. And, she was painting it like the husband, Arthur, was like, he didn't know anything about it. He was just completely unaware. And he was a sweet man. It was so horrible what happened to him. And she said, and sometimes Galus would sing outside his bedroom while he was sleeping. And just some sort of incantation that was sending animals scurrying away from the house. And she said, animals have a nose for this sort of thing. They can sense evil. And Ned, being the, snarky lawyer that he's being during this trial, he says, oh, so now we have to take the testimony of a cat. Everybody started laughing, so then this woman starts to look kind of silly. So then, the judges were like, look, don't make fun of the witness. Okay. That's not cool. So Ned was like, look, all we have here Ned said to the woman, he was like, look, isn't it true that you're just unhappy working for the Duncans? And she was like, no, I was very content there. He's like, really? So that's why you tried to get a job at the Castle Leok? And while you were there, you were saying that Arthur Duncan was a flatulent, old bastard, and his wife was a flippity zibbit or whatever. flippity something. I don't know what the hell that was. Some sort of name, I guess, that meant, someone unsavory, I guess, back in those times. And she's like, I don't recall using those words. And he was like, look, Your Honors, this is just a situation where we have a malcontented maidservant who is just unhappy where she works. And she's just talking shit about her bosses that she don't like. So, after Ned basically exposed her for, being kind of two-faced, the judges told her to take a seat. So she was told she went to sit down. So Ned's job basically is to delegitimize anyone who comes before the court, which is what lawyers do. Lawyers have been doing it since apparently the beginning of being a lawyer, which is basically making anyone who is against their client look bad, to discredit. That is the word. Okay. So basically, Ned, is his job is to discredit anyone who comes forward and tries to say bad things about his clients. So he starts with a maidservant. He discredits her. Then after the maidservant, we have a woman, a very timid, shy woman who comes forward and starts to talk about the fact that she had a sick child. And she knew that her baby was a changeling, said because the baby was born healthy, but then suddenly it stopped thriving and stopped growing. So she knew it was a changeling. So Claire had this look on her face like, uh-oh, this is about that damn baby. So then the woman was like, so me and my husband, we took the baby to the fairy hill and we put the baby in the hollow of the fairy tree. And we waited to see if the fairies would come. But while we were waiting, we saw this woman, her, show up and take the baby out of the hollow and put it in her vile embrace and start incanting these, you know, evil spells over it. Basically, that wasn't what happened, of course. Claire was just, you know, talking to the baby's bodies, basically apologizing, saying she's so sorry she was too late to help it. But the woman from a distance looks at this and thinks that Claire is chanting some sort of evil curse. So she's like, so when we went back to the hill the next morning, thinking that, you know, hopefully that, you know, our baby would be there. The switch would have been made, that the fairies would have replaced their dead baby or sick baby with our alive, healthy baby. We found the dead baby. So we feel like this woman, Claire, did something. So Ned knows that he can't approach this woman with the same, you know, snarkiness that he did with the maid. He has to be sympathetic and empathetic with this woman. So he says, my condolences on the loss of your baby. But isn't it true that you did not stop this woman from interfering and contaminating the baby? You basically sat aside and watched this all go down. And the woman was like, yes, I was afeared. I was afraid. And he said, okay. And because of your fear, you allowed this woman to interfere with the switch. And the reason why the baby wasn't switched out with the fairy child is because you did nothing to stop this from happening. And the woman had to kind of nod her head and say, yes, I guess that's true. So Ned was like, but at least you get to know that your child is still healthy and living forever with the fairies. Yes, you were stuck with this dead changeling fairy child, but your child still gets to live happy and healthy with the fairies. So maybe we should be thanking this woman because she assured that your baby would remain with the fairies. Isn't that true? And the lady was like, I guess. So Ned masterfully spun this story so that it looked like Claire actually did something good instead of being someone who killed a baby. So masterful in his spinning and weaving of these stories. So the next person, I'm seeing, who was the next person that came forward? Oh yeah, the next person that came forward was some weird dude who basically said that he saw Galus in the woods flying and he saw her casting spells and her eyes were red and she had wings. And so he was just lying his ass off. Ned's like, okay. And of course, everyone in the audience believed him. They were like, the witch, she's a witch, burn the witch, you know. So the judges was like, okay, we're going to recess for today. We will pick this up tomorrow. So, you know, Claire and Galus were like, okay, how do we combat the whole, you know, flying and red eye shit and the wings? How do we do that? Because it's obvious he's lying, but if they want to believe it, then they're going to believe it. But anyway, Ned comes forward before they are escorted back to the thieves' hole. He gives Claire a flask of some liquor and says, here, this will keep you warm, you know, so, you know, drink this. And Claire is like, did Colum send you? Did Colum send you to come and protect me? And Ned gave her a look like, and she was like, what? So Ned was like, look, don't worry. I'm here. That's all you need to worry about. And, you know, just I'm going to do everything I can. Okay. So they're escorted back to the thieves' hole. So while Claire and Galus are in the thieves' hole, they're drinking from this flask. And Claire is like, well, at least Ned seems optimistic. And Galus is like, bitch, I guess you just don't get it. They mean to kill us. They mean to kill us. We are not getting out of this. Not simply. No, this is going to go down. Tomorrow, we are going to be ash scattered to the four winds. So drink up tonight, bitch, because tomorrow we're dead. So the next morning, they are taken out of the thieves' hole again and put back on the stand in front of the courtroom filled with angry mob villagers. And the first witness to be called is Leary. Leary comes forward and starts talking about how Claire made her a potion because she had asked Claire for a potion to open up Jamie Fraser's heart. But she said that Claire took the potion herself instead, and that's why Claire ended up with Jamie. So, and then she says, and when I confronted Claire with it, she struck me. And one of the judges is like, is this true? Did you create a potion and did you strike this girl? And she's like, well, the potion wasn't really a potion, okay? I was just trying to help the bitch. And as far as me striking her, she put an ill wish under my bed and tried to seduce my husband. And Leary's like, he was the love of my life. And Claire said, look, this girl fabricated a letter, was the reason why I even was at Gayla's house when the marshal showed up to arrest her. Because she lied. She wrote this false note just so I would go to Dick Gayla's house. She's the one that called the marshal. She's the reason that I'm even here. So she's a lying bitch. Y'all gonna believe this bitch? Of course, they didn't care about any of that. They told Leary to sit down. Then they called the next witness, which was the minister, the pastor. He comes forward all dramatic with the light behind him from the door, talking about, I have been the pastor for this parish for Lord knows how many years and blah, blah, blah. And he starts talking about how he tried to help Thomas Baxter. Thomas Baxter, of course, is the little boy that had eaten the poison plant and was sick. And Claire saved him when the pastor was just trying to send him to Jesus because he thought he was possessed by the devil. So the pastor admits that this was wrong, that he made the wrong call, and that Claire Fraser was the one that saved him. Saved Thomas Baxter. Pat Baxter, by knowing that he had eaten some sort of poison plant, and she gave him some medicine to help him. And then he's like, I was wrong. He said, I said that she was the whore of Babylon. You had welcomed the whore of Babylon to your midst, but she saved the boy. And I was wrong. And I have failed you. I failed God. I failed Thomas Baxter. He drops to his knees and he says, I am no longer worthy to be your minister. I have to leave. I have to give up the ministry. And then he bows his head, you know, all dramatic and stuff. And then one of the people in the audience says, this is the witch's fiendish plan to make a man of God turn away from the Lord. You know, she's a witch. This is her fiendish plan. So everybody falls in line with this. Yes, burn the witch. Burn the witch. She's a witch. She's making this priest turn from God. And Claire's like, what? How the hell did you get to there? was amazing. No matter what was said in front of these people, they were going to find a way to twist it to make it the witch's fault, Claire and Galus's fault, and they were going to burn them. It's just how it was going to go down. So Claire starts going off. She's like, this is preposterous. This is ridiculous. This is a travesty. And the judges try to get her to stop talking, but she keeps screaming. He's like, you know, nope, we're not going to allow this. We're not going to allow this. And Ned was like, look, hey, can I get a recess, please? I need to talk to my client. And the judges were like, okay, you have 5 minutes. Take them and talk to them. So Ned had to take Claire and Galus to the back room to talk to them. And Ned was just, he was quick. He was like, look, let me just be honest. He looked at Galus. He's like, look, I can't do nothing for you. Okay. You've been here for years practicing your potions and your witchcraft and dancing in the forest naked. You have been establishing your history with these people for too long. Ain't nothing I can do with you. But Claire, she just got here. Okay. We can help you. We can just say that you were bewitched by this woman, that this woman, she lied to you and she hexed you and that you were under her spell. And you now realize the error of your ways and you now want to go forward on the righteous path. So we can save you. We can't save her. And Claire was like, that's fucked up. I can't just throw her under the bus like that. Neither one of her are witches. Ned was like, it doesn't matter what you are. It matters what they believe you are. They know she's a witch in their heads. They know she's a witch. They don't really know that about you. Because like I said, you're new. You just got here. You just came to the party. We can save you. So what's it going to be? I'm going to give y'all some time to think about it. I'm going to step outside. So Ned went to step outside to give Claire and Galus time to think about this. Claire was like, I can't do this. Galus was like, why are you here? Claire was like, what? Why are you here? And Claire was like, I was in the forest and I was attacked. Nope, you're lying, bitch. You've been lying since you got here. I want the truth. So Claire finally says, look, it was an accident. I don't know how I got here. It was an accident. I didn't mean to get here, you know, and I want to go home. And I don't even know if it's possible. And Galus was like, oh, so you're not here to change things. And this is relevant also because I forgot to mention that when they were in the thieves' hole at one point, Galus admitted to Claire that the reason that she was with Dougal was because Dougal was her match and that he wanted to fight for all of Scotland. He wanted to make sure that the rightful Scottish king was returned to the throne and that Scotland was freed from British rule. And so Claire was like, oh, so you're a freaking Jacobite. So that's the reason why you're with Dougal. She's like, it's because of Dougal's power and influence and what he believes, but also because of how passionate he is about it. And Galus admitted to Claire that that's why she's there. She's there to change things. She is there to help Dougal fight for the Jacobite cause. So now that Galus is trying to figure out why Claire is there, and she sees that Claire is just there because it was a mistake, an accident, Galus was like, I'm going to die for nothing. This is nothing. So Ned comes back and he says, we need to go. You know, the recess is over. We got to go back. So Claire's like, what are we going to do? And Gator's like, looks like we finna go to a fucking barbecue. Now, mind you, barbecue was not something that was known in this century. So that should have been like a light bulb for Claire, but it wasn't. So, you know, she's not thinking. She's nervous. She's upset. They're about to, you know, be sentenced to death. So anyway, when they get back in the courtroom, they're back on the stand. The judges are like, do you have anything to say? No, I think Ned comes forward and said, Mrs. Fraser has something that she would like to address to the court. So Claire stands up and she's looking around at the people and looks at Ned and looks at Galus. And then she's like, I think Mr. Gowan was mistaken. I don't have anything to say. And she sits back down and Galus is like, are you mad? And Claire was like, maybe I am. So then the judge stands up and says, okay, well, if you have nothing more to say, this court has found you guilty of witchcraft. And we go by the law that a witch is not allowed to live. So we are going to sentence you to death. So everybody in the courtroom, burn the witches, burn the witch. You know, and it becomes all chaotic and stuff. And Claire starts screaming, this is preposterous. You are all going to burn in hell. You are killing innocent people. You got to burn in hell. And the judge is like, you will not talk to us this way in this courtroom. Stripper and scalper. So they drag Claire off the stand. And I guess the bailiff or whoever this guy is, who serves as like the security guard or whatever, strips Claire's dress and the back of her dress open, puts her down on her knees, basically. I think they tie her arms up. I don't know how they make her stand still. But anyway, they put her down, strip the back of her dress open, and basically this guy takes out a whip and starts to whip her back. I mean, lash after lash after lash, and it is horrible to witness and Galus is up there on the stand and she's upset by it. Everybody in the courtroom is excited by it for some reason. They think this is awesome, but Galus is upset. And then Jamie shows up in the back of the courtroom. And when he sees what's happening, he freaks out like, get your hands off my wife. So he runs forward. He kicking everybody out of the way. Jamie is just knocking the shit out of everybody. I mean, man, woman, it don't matter. Get the fuck out of his way. He basically kicks a path toward Claire. Knocks everybody out of the way. Gets her and you know, he takes his swords out. Puts them on anybody who will come near him. And he says, I swore an oath when I married this woman to protect her before God. And if any of you feel like you have a higher authority than the Almighty, then I have to inform you that I am not of that opinion. And the judge is like, you have no authority in this court. And Jamie told him what his authority was. He was married to her. This was his wife. And his authority was his wedding vows to protect this woman before God. And he was going to do just that. So, Galus took this opportunity to say, this woman is not a witch. She stood up. This woman is not a witch. She was my pawn. She says, I am a witch though. And she takes off her little neck dressing or whatever. And then she says, and I can prove it because I bear the devil's mark. And she pulled her dress down and showed the scar on her arm. On her left arm. It looks like a little round circular scar on her arm. And when Claire sees it, Claire is like, oh my God. And narrative Claire says in her head that when I saw that mark, I knew what that meant. Because at one point when they were on the stand before all of this scalping thing went down, Galus said, it is possible. Because when they were in the back room, Claire has said she didn't even know if it's possible that she can go back home. And Galus on the stand at one point had said to Claire, it is possible. But she didn't explain what she meant by it. And Claire did not know what she meant. But then when Claire saw the scar on her arm, she realized that that was not a devil's mark. That was a smallpox vaccine scar. So basically what that meant was that Galus was not from here. She was from Claire's time. She was from 1968 because Galus had said not only what it is possible. I'm getting all jumbled up now. When they were on the stand, before the whole scalping thing went down, before Claire, you know, burst out in the courtroom and they decided to beat her in the courtroom, Galus had said to Claire that it is possible. And then she said 1968. Very cryptic. Claire was just looking at her and said, what does that mean? So Galus never really had a chance to explain, or she didn't try to explain. So Claire was left wondering, what did that mean? So when she saw the vaccine scar on Galus's arm, she put it together. It means that Galus is from the future. She's actually from the year 1968. So Galus goes even further with her whole, I'm a witch. I'm the one. I tricked Claire. Claire is not really a witch. I was the one that hexed her and bewildered her. She didn't have anything to do with anything. I'm the one. She rips off her dress, exposing her pregnant belly, and she says, not only am I a witch, but I bear the child of the devil. And oh, the courtroom goes nuts then. Everybody is just all over the place. She says to Claire, run, bitch. So Claire and Jamie take off. And they basically take Gillis off the stand, wrap her up in some sort of drape from the courtroom to cover up her nudity. And one of the judges at least has some sense and says, she's with child. You can't burn her, bitch. She's pregnant, you know. But the courtroom people aren't listening. They basically carry her off like some sort of offering, some sort of sacrifice. And they're carrying her along, even outside through the town. And they're about to put her on the scaffold to burn her. So Claire and Jamie, they're off, you know, hiding out, you know, away from everyone. They see this going on. And they leave as they watch Gaelis, you know, be carried through the town, getting ready to be burned. So Jamie takes Claire away from all of this. He rides her off until they're far enough away so that he can tend to her back wounds, because she was whipped, you know, pretty good in that courtroom. And he takes her to the forest, and he, you know, I guess he gets some water from somewhere and a rag, and he tries to dab her back and ease her cuts a bit. And he says, they're not deep. He says, I don't think you'll be marked. But then he sits down next to her on the log, and he says, Claire, I have to ask you a question. And we said we would be honest with each other, so please tell me the truth. Are you a witch? And Claire looks at him like, what? And he's like, I've seen that mark on your arm many times. And he pulls down her dress a little bit to reveal the mark on her left arm, just like Gaelis's mark. And he's like, and I didn't think anything of it until today when Gaelis said that was a devil's mark. And you have one too. So does that mean you're a witch? And Claire was like, no, I am not a witch, but I can see why you would think so. And after I tell you the truth, you'll probably think I am one anyway. And she starts to pretty much just break down to him about how she knows things about what's going to happen with the Scots. And she knew about Jack Black Randall, or Black Jack Randall. And she knew about, you know, and how she can walk into a room with a bunch of people with smallpox and never get sick. She can nurse them and she can be around them, all kinds of sick people, but she'll never catch a disease because this mark is not the devil's mark. It is a smallpox vaccination. And you don't know what that is because this is not something that happened in your time, because I'm from the future, motherfucker. I am from the future. And Jamie looks at her. And then he looks down, and he looks all complete. He looks so cute, by the way, in this scene. He's a little confused and stern thinking face. And then at one point, he just gets up and he walks away and he kind of paces a little bit. And he turns and he looks at her and he says, okay, I believe you. He said, I don't understand it, but I believe you, because we have a truth between us. And whatever you tell me, I'm going to believe you. And the look on Claire's face, she was like, wow, okay. I don't know if I would say the same, but okay. So as they sit there in the forest, Claire tells Jamie everything from beginning to end, how she came to this place, what happened, everything that she knows, all of the things that she knows about what will happen in the future. Also, she tells him about the Battle of Culloden. And she explains to him why, you know, she ran that time and tried to get to the stones. And he's like, so when you ran to get to the stones and you were captured by the Redcoats, you were trying to get back to your time and your husband. She said, yes. And he says, and I beat you for it. She said, you couldn't have known. She says, you know, you had no way of knowing. So I don't blame you for that. He apologized anyway. He said, I'm so sorry. So, you know, they you know, finish their conversation. They get together and they ride off. And they start traveling, you know, again. At one point during the night, you know, I mean, Jamie is thinking heavily about all the stuff that Claire has told him. And at one point during the night while she's sleeping and they have a campfire, well, he decides to give her a little little finger action. I don't know. I think he's just, I don't know. He's feeling melancholy about everything that she has told him. And I think he just wants to have an intimate moment with her. But his idea of an intimate moment is just to give her a little hand job by the fire. And it's really sweet. It's romantic. Although his fingers are kind of dirty. I'm like, ooh, that's not good. But you know what? They were used to that shit back then. So, who knows? But anyway, she wakes up as he's doing this to her and she's panting and she says, oh, I want you inside me. He's like, no, I just want to watch you. So he's, you know, bringing her to climax just with his hand and he's kissing her and, you know, it's very, very hot. You know, it's a hot scene. So then the next morning, as she's by the river, you know, washing up for the day, he looks over at her and he's thoughtful, you know, like he doesn't know what to say initially, but then he goes over to her and he says, all right, Claire, are you ready to go home? And she says, yes. She stands up all bright and cheery. Then he says, okay, take a look. And she doesn't know what he's talking about at first. And then she goes in the direction that he's referring to. And as he's looking after her, you can see he has this little kind of conflicted look on his face. But she goes up this hill and then she goes and look over in the distance and she sees that they are back at Craigna Dunn. She didn't realize it until then. And he's like, this is what you wanted. You wanted to go back to the stones and you wanted to go home to your husband. So here you are. He takes her over to the stones and then he's like, is this where you want it to be? And she's like, yeah, this is the standing stones. This is it. And he's like, he goes over to the largest stone and he's like, is this the one? She's like, yes. He says, what'd you do last time? So she goes over to the stone and she's like, I didn't do much of anything. I just went over it and I touched it. And she raises her hand like she's getting ready to touch it again. But Jamie, he snatches her away and he grabs her hand and he pulls her to him. And he says, I'm sorry. I stopped you. I shouldn't have done that, but I wasn't ready. You know, and, you know, he's really conflicted. He's holding her. You can tell he's distraught. He doesn't really know what to do, but he knows that he needs to let her go because he can't force her to stay here. This is not her time. He said, this is not your time. This is just a time filled with nothing but harm and danger for you. You need to go back to your own time. And at this point, he's telling her goodbye. He says, I'll be down at the campfire. And I'll stay there until I know you are gone and everything is safe. And he says goodbye to her. He's trying to be strong. He's holding in all his emotion. You can tell he's holding it in because his face is just lined with the tension that it is taking for him to hold in all this emotion that he's feeling. Because this is his wife too. It might be Frank's wife, but this is his wife too, and he loves her. He doesn't want to send her away, but he knows that that's the best thing for her, and his love for her is strong enough that he wants to do what's best for her, and the best thing for her is to send her back to where she belongs. So he's sacrificing himself and his love and his relationship with her to send her back to her own time, which is beautiful, and I cried. I did. Even this time, I did. So anyway, as he's leaving, she calls out to him, Jamie. And he stops. He doesn't turn to face her, but he stops. And then she says, no, not thank you. She says goodbye to him as well. And then he just keeps going. You know, he just goes down to his campfire. And Claire sits there for the longest time. She's contemplating what she should do. You know, she's sitting at the stones. Then at one point, she just stands up, walks over to the stone. And from the way that the camera is angled and the way that the scene is shot, you're thinking that she's going to go to the stone and go back to her own time. Because we then zoom in on the stone as it seems like she's approaching it. And then the image goes to black. The scene goes to black. And then in the next scene, we see Jamie lying at the campfire. His face is very tense, even though he's trying to sleep, because he's not happy. You know, he's just not happy. He just sent his wife back to the future. He's not happy. He's miserable, actually. But then he hears, "On your feet, soldier." And he looks up, you know, gasping like he's surprised. And Claire is standing there wrapped in his kilt still. And she says, "Take me home to Lallybroch." And he sits up and he's looking at her, and this tear streams down his face out of his left eye. And it is so sweet. Then he lowers his head a little bit and then he nods, and, you know, he opens his arms for her, and she leaps into his arms, and then they kiss. And then that is the end of the episode. It ends there. So that was the end of The Devil's Mark. That was a really, really, really emotional and very lovely, lovely episode in most parts. At least the parts where Jamie and Claire were together and she told him about who she really is, where she's really from, and what's really going on. And this man just believed her, just trusted what she said. Just trusted her and believed her, even though she was telling him shit that he could not possibly understand, that he could not possibly get. It didn't matter. His love and his trust for her was just that deep that it didn't matter that he believed her anyway, in spite of the fact that she was saying things that did not make any sense. And does that kind of love, do y'all think that that exists in reality? I don't know. I think it's just an Outlander land. I think it's just in storyland that that kind of love exists. I don't think there's ever any love that exists to the point where if someone, I'm trying to think, if someone that I was with came to me and said, "I'm from the future." And the reason that all these weird things are happening with us, even if I witnessed the weird things, even if I had witnessed things that I did not understand. If someone that I was with came to me and said, "I'm from the future, and that's what the explanation for this is," I'd be like, okay, I just don't know if I would believe it. I don't believe that I would. I'm just too cynical. I've seen too many things and I've watched too much TV and too many movies to be someone that would just automatically go, "Okay, that makes sense to me. And I'll believe it. And I believe you and I trust you." Maybe the fact that he's from a period in time where there isn't a lot of cynical thinking, you know, he's from a time where people believe in fairies and people definitely believe in God. You know, atheists back then were not very common. Everybody believed in God, you know. So it was a time of fantasy and wishes and dreams and hopes and stuff that, you know, people had to believe in because times were so rough and so hard that if you did not believe in something higher power than yourself and magic and religion and spirituality, if you didn't have those beliefs, how would you get through your day? You know, it would just be too difficult. So I get why, you know, things were just a little bit different in that time. But it's 2018 now, y'all, so it would be a little difficult to pull something like that off nowadays. Anyway, that is it for this week's episode. We are going to go ahead and wrap this up. And we will be back next week with episode 27 of Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts. And in episode 27, we are going to... And here we are again. once again, not knowing what the next episode is called because I do not prepare. And the next episode is entitled Lollybrock because, of course, now that Jamie knows everything about his new wife, he is going to take her home to his childhood home, to where he grew up, to Lollybrock. And he's going to try and make this thing work. And he's going to try and make her the Lady of Brockturok. And he's going to be the Laird. And it's going to be awesome, or will it? Stay tuned to find out, in case you haven't watched the episode or you don't know what's going to happen. Stay tuned. We will rewatch and recap next week. So thank you guys for joining me again this week. Hope you come back next week. Have a good rest of your week, and I will see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.